The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
But a couple of things come up. I've had one student, she was the she was forming the idea, and another person was the engineer who was going to execute it. And everybody doesn't want to spend money. And I tell them that if you don't spend the money up front, first of all, you're investing in the company. You got to spend money to make money. Right. If you don't spend the money up front, you know, if you go to LegalZoom or and to me, LegalZoom is bullshit.
Yeah, but I hate LegalZoom and Rocket Lawyer. They're like
things,
my,
you know, all of those online things to save money.
Right.
Then if there's a problem and you don't see a lawyer and get it in writing first, it's going to be a hell of a lot more expensive to fix the problem.
Right.
And your company, because you're a sole proprietor or two people, your company can't go forward because as soon as you get in a lawsuit, you're looking backwards to fix what happened.
Right. And they can't hire somebody like me who's less expensive to negotiate because they got nothing in writing. You need a litigator and they're going to want a $20,000 retainer, $25,000 retainer.
Exactly. And then so one woman said, well, I won't do a contract with my partner until we have money coming in. I said, honey, the horse has already left the barn at that point.
Yeah.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hey, I'm Sandra Holtzman. I'm the Chief Strategy Officer and founder of Marketing Cures, which is a marketing agency, marketing advertising strategy agency. And I'm also a faculty that teaches marketing and entrepreneurship. And I've started four companies. I'm working on my fourth company right now. And I really love entrepreneurs. I love working with them. And it's a big turn on for me to help people achieve their goals as entrepreneurs and also to help them guide down the road, down their road so they can avoid some mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes, but some mistakes.
All right, Sandra. So thanks for coming on the podcast. I appreciate you switching computers so it can make it sound good for you. And thanks for letting me teach.
Virtual background also.
You could try that.
Works. Nah, it didn't work.
And usually if it's difficult with the camera, it's not going to let you do virtual background. But
yeah.
And thanks for letting me teach your kids, adults really, in your class.
You were great.
Last week. Yeah, that was a good group. A lot of young entrepreneurs, people that are trying to make it in the business world, right? What school is that you teach at?
Hungry for Information. That's New York City Small Business Services. Okay. And they license a course called Fast Track from the Kaufman Institute, which is in Kansas City.
Yeah. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think that, I don't know if it's the same Kauffman Institute, but I was involved with a group called the Young Entrepreneurs Academy up in Rochester. And I think they started with a grant from the Kauffman Institute. And it's definitely, you know, there's some sort of an entrepreneurs institute, right? So it's got to be the same one.
Yeah, and a foundation. It's a pretty amazing organization. They train, you have to get certified to facilitate.
Okay.
And you go through 2 or 3 days of training, and then you're certified to facilitate entrepreneurs. And it's according to a guidebook or a lesson book. And now it's all been moved to online, which makes it sort of easier. And the advantage of it is it covers all the basics you need to know in a structured manner for entrepreneurs. So it's fun. And then if the kids depend, the kids, I call them kids, but they're not, they're adults who are starting businesses.
Yeah.
But if they want to take a detour, like, for instance, somebody in the class texted me in the middle of the afternoon one day and said, I need to submit estimates. And he expected me to help him right away. And I said, well, let's wait and talk about it in class. And he's no, the guy needs it right away. So I couldn't help him because I just didn't have the time. And then when we brought it up in class, we used it as a discussion point. If you don't have a client already, what's the rush?
Right. Oh, he didn't have a client that he was doing an estimate for?
No. This was a potential client. So what's the rush?
Right.
And my question is, how many other people are bidding? Because if you're taking 10 bids, I'm not interested.
Right. Well, of course, because then you're putting a lot of effort for.
Right.
Unless you know.
Or are they just shopping? Or do they have somebody already chosen and they're looking for a cheaper bid to use as leverage?
Right. That's true.
Or are they trying to find out what they need to do and they're going to give it to one of their suppliers from you?
Right.
There's all kinds of issues. And why can't they wait 24 hours? What's the rush?
I would agree.
So the whole class went over that and everybody got to contribute, but also everybody got to learn.
Very nice. Yeah, it's a good collaborative environment. So Kauffman funds you got training from Kauffman and then you teach at the.
Right. Well, what happens is State University of New York, it started that way, licensed it.
Right.
So Institute, like the Women's Center for Entrepreneurship in Chatham, licenses Kauffman. I facilitate for them also. And then I think the licensee trains you. I'm not sure how that works. In the old days, when I was certified, there were 10 or 15 people in my class learning how to facilitate or getting the training. Now, if you want to get the training, you have to fly out to Kansas City and take it in person.
Not this year.
No.
This year you get a pass. You can do it online.
In general.
Right. In general. That's nice. All right. Well, let's go back though. I want to hear more about before we get into all the stuff, the great stuff you're doing now, about your background, Neil, where you're from originally, how you got interested in entrepreneurship and teaching entrepreneurship. You said you're on your fourth business. So let's go back a little bit and learn more about you and your background.
I was born in a log cabin. I was born in Uptown Manhattan. And,
okay. Lower East Side, Upper East Side, Upper West Side.
No.
Like Harlem?
Inwood.
Westchester?
Inwood.
Oh, okay. Way up.
I was so far north of Manhattan, I was practically the Bronx.
You're almost in City Island if you kept swimming. Yeah.
Exactly. Went to local schools. Actually, I went to elementary, junior high, and high school with the person who launched 1-2-3 for Lotus.
Okay.
And
that's got to be something big. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do people still use Lotus? I don't think they do, right?
I'm sorry?
Do big organizations still use Lotus 1-2-3?
I don't know.
Yeah. I haven't seen it in years. Yeah. Okay.
Technology changes so fast. Look,
BlackBerry was big at one point too. So, you know.
And I worked with somebody in a nonprofit for sustainability. And he sold the name BlackBerry from his company to Research in Motion.
Really?
So this is how people get names.
Yeah,
BlackBerry
sure.
BlackBerry was from the Wind and the Willows. So it's interesting. It's interesting that you brought that up. Anyway, went to Bronx Science, went to City University of New York, Lehman. And then I couldn't make up my mind if I wanted a master's in film or in English. So I went to 2 graduate schools in 2 different states simultaneously for a master's degree in each. That lasted 6 months.
Very cultured.
I went to the Breadloaf School of English in Vermont.
Okay.
Which only meets during the summer. You go 4 summers, you get your master's. But it was too much work. And then during the winter, I got a master's in cinema studies from NYU. So that's my background.
Okay.
In the 70s, when I got the degree, nobody hired women. In fact, I go on interviews and they say, we don't hire women.
They would just say that?
Flat out.
Oh, I can't say that now.
Yeah, right. And I'd say, you know, that's illegal.
Right.
Like, we don't care.
We don't care. Right. Exactly. Yeah, right. Unbelievable. So,
you know, it's the film business. You know, oh, you look very talented, but the last woman we had didn't want to mess up her nails. I'm like, yeah, O'Shea, can you drive a semi? Yeah, I can. Actually, I had somebody who would teach me in the dorm I was in. Still didn't get the job. So I wound up kicking around the film industry for a few years. And then everybody who I hung out with, who was either in the screenwriter program or other programs, said, Sandy, you're a writer.
Right. Well, what did you want to do?
Huh?
What did you want to do?
I wanted to produce.
Oh, you wanted to produce. Well, production like you basically raise money and get the thing out there? And
right.
Yeah.
Although I wasn't good at the money raising part because I didn't understand that part when I first got out of school. But I wound up going out with a film crew for the National Organization of Women and shooting footage. I got Woody Allen, Diane Keaton.
Oh.
I got Bella Abzug. I got Ellie
Smeagol. Big stuff.
Yeah. And I have a rough cut that's up on YouTube, but we didn't get too far. We couldn't sell it.
Okay.
We couldn't get it picked up.
Right. It's a tough business.
Huh? It's a tough business.
Right.
And by the time I figured out the wherewithal of what to do, I was already ensconced in marketing. And all my friends said, look, you're a writer. Go out, you know, become a copywriter. You can do that. And so I took some courses and kicked around for a while. And was politely said, oh, we're not hiring right now. We'll keep you on file. And then one person.
Now, in those days, copywriting was like for ad agencies, right? I mean, there was no like blogs and internet. So
No, it was ad agencies.
Right. Okay.
So I wound up going to Lord Geller, Federico and Einstein.
Okay.
Which was an old ad agency, a former agency, wasn't old.
Okay.
And Einstein wound up interviewing me and, he said, look, I can be polite and tell you we can't use you right now. We'll keep you in mind. But I'm going to tell you the truth. Your book sucks. Go out and fix it.
What book? You had written a book at that point?
No. They call your portfolio.
Oh, like your portfolio. Right.
Yeah,
got it.
Yeah.
So he didn't like your portfolio.
Yeah. He said, it's terrible.
Okay,
so it took me another 2 years.
At least he's honest, right?
He was honest. It was the best advice I ever got.
Right.
Took a couple of years, went out, and then I got... I was still kicking around and I got a junior copywriting job. Then I got a senior copywriting job. And then I got an associate creative director job. And somewhere along the line, I moved from consumer into pharmaceuticals. So I did that for about 10 years.
But all on the agency side, you're all in work for ad agencies.
All on the agency side until I got laid off from my last New York job. And I went to work in-house at something called 30 West Advertising for the company formerly known as Wyeth Arst.
Okay.
So I commuted from Manhattan. It was 3 hours each way, all the way out to the main line in Philadelphia. Then we got laid off there because Wyeth bought another company and they had to offer the copywriters and art directors in that company full-time jobs first. So me and my art director partner got laid off, and the creative director, who had also worked at Sudline Hennessy, where I started and where I worked in New York, made some phone calls, and I wound up working in Center City, Philadelphia for 2 years at the Hal Lewis Group.
And you still took the train down? You lived in Manhattan, and you still took the train down?
Yeah. Well, I was kind of half living with somebody in Princeton.
So it wasn't always a long commute.
It wasn't always a long haul.
Okay.
And then my art director was in Princeton, so we'd work on the way in.
Right. But you're, like you said, you're the sole survivor. None of these companies are around anymore. You're still here.
Yeah, all these companies, it's like Pac-Man. Everybody gets eaten up.
Yeah.
Well, Hal Lewis died. And after that, the company slowly went downhill because he was the marquee name.
Right. He was the driving force.
Sudline Hennessy had been owned by YNR, but then got gobbled up by somebody else. YNR got gobbled up. And you know this situation.
Yeah, it's like the accounting business. Everything gets to be the big tool.
Right. Yeah. Everybody, right. The big eight is now one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how many big ad agencies are left? I guess there's still Gray Advertising and there's like a handful of them, right?
Yeah, but they're all multinational conglomerates.
Yeah, they're big.
Like Saatchi & Saatchi, Gray, right. You know, I forgot what YNR became.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So they're huge organizations. So after Hal Lewis, I had a, I have a mentor and a close friend. I had a couple of mentors, and he kept saying, start your own company, start your own company. And I said, no, I want the weekly or the bi-weekly paycheck. I
can't, right. You think it's secure, but it's really not.
Right. Right. I want the security, even though right. there was no security.
Right. But nobody knows that.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
You know, my client calls me on a Sunday night out of courtesy and he says, look, we're going to fire the agency tomorrow because we're moving to the West Coast. I just wanted to give you a heads up. So I came in the next day and expected to be laid off, and I was laid off.
Oh, and really? Because that was a big client you were working on, and then they lost the business?
That was a big client I was working on. So yeah. Less than 2 months later, he left his job, started another job, and brought me with him, and that was my first client.
Brought you with him to work for them, like on a contract basis? So yeah. You were starting
no,
your
no.
own consulting?
As an agency. At that point, I became my own agency.
Okay.
And so I wound up working for them, and they were in healthcare information technology. And the company he had come from was a biotech company.
Okay.
And then I was freelancing through another company, and I was working at Pfizer through the company.
Right.
And my connection at Pfizer and I got along. We're still friends. Actually, I'm still friends with the last client. I don't lose clients. They stay as friends, even right. if they're not working together.
Yeah.
And she introduced me to somebody who needed a small agency. So I had a division in Pfizer as an agent, as a client for 10 years.
And as an agency, you did everything from copywriting, marketing, all PR, everything?
It depended what they needed.
Okay.
Yeah, I did internal communications, brochures, patient information brochures, sales brochures, and information brochures to professionals.
Got it.
Wrote white papers. I placed the white papers.
Okay.
I bought media because the wonderful thing about Hal Lewis, and it's true of a lot of agencies not located in New York, is you go out to work there and they really don't know how a big agency works.
Right.
So I wound up being everything at this agency. I was the account executive. I bought the media. I negotiated the media. I wrote the ads. I coordinated with the art director and everybody else. So I did it all.
Right. But they didn't know any better. So they didn't think that was odd that they were dealing with.
No, they didn't know any better. And they felt threatened because they bring in the big New York talent. And then the New York talent comes in and does it the right way. And everybody isn't doing it that way. And everybody gets all threatened.
Interesting. Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And this was what year was this?
Oh, God, in the 90s.
So the internet was already around because I think I learned about the internet in like 92.
Yeah, it was just starting.
Yeah, okay. Just so it was starting. Probably early. It's funny. I went to this youth conference. So I was in, it was after college, but I was at a law school. Yeah, I think it was just taking the bar. I went to this youth conference in like Israel. So there were people from, kids from Europe and Israel and the United States. And they were all talking about this thing called the internet. Never heard of it. And I said, that can't be a thing. They're like, what do you mean? I live in the United States. We hear about things first, not last.
We get everything last.
And sure enough, I get home and there's AOL brochures on everybody's doorstep. And, you know, the internet state, that was when Prodigy was around and all the CompuServe and all that, that stuff. So yeah, that was kind of when it started.
That's one of the big fears about starting your own business. It's like when you work in a big corporation, you get fed all this information.
Right.
And then when you go out on your own, it's like, where am I going to get the information? And it turns out a lot of times you're more on the cutting edge than the big corporations.
Oh, for sure. I think you're because you're insulated there. And yeah. And so, now it's even easier because you can tap into. Yeah. Okay.
So
we're talking, that was like basically 30 years ago.
97.
Yeah.
My company's 23 years old.
20 years ago. Okay.
And then I went along. One of my clients, the client who brought me along, left the job, left the next job he was at after about 5 years. You know, it was M&A city. Everybody got bought out.
Okay.
And he said, I have time. Let's write a book about marketing. So I said, okay. And we didn't want to be distracted. So he lived in Cincinnati. I live in New York. And we decided to take a suite in Chicago for 5 days and get the guts of the book written.
You know, I guess you couldn't go on Zoom together and work on it. So
it was no Zoom.
Right.
This is pre-Skype.
Right. Yeah.
It doesn't
have to be. It's impossible to do on the phone. So you just said, right, you know what? Yeah. Let's bang it out in a week.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Get the guts out.
Right.
So the summer went by and he got a job as a CEO at a biotech company. And I knew he wasn't going to be able to do it, even though he kept saying he would.
Right. But you had a manuscript at that point, right? So
no, we had nothing.
Oh, I thought you went through the 5 days and banged it out.
No. That was the plan. We didn't do it.
And then he never, I got it. He got the job first.
He couldn't commit because he got a CEO job.
Got it.
Finally, after about 2 months of waiting to make this happen and trying to make it happen, I let him off the hook and he needed to be off the hook. So I said, okay, I'm going ahead with this. I have another writer who is also a creative director. And she and I wrote the book. He wrote the foreword. And the book is called Lies Startups Tell Themselves, A No-Bullshit Guide for PhDs, Lab Rats, Suits, and Entrepreneurs.
Is it still available?
It is on Amazon. It was written.
What's it called? Lies?
Lies Startups Tell Themselves.
All right. I got to put a link to that on the website for sure.
I'm coming back.
I know. The byline for the book's even better than the title. Okay, great.
So
there you go. Okay.
We couldn't.
I love that.
So
a no bullshit guy.
Self-published.
Yeah.
We didn't want to self-publish.
Right.
So we found a publisher.
Right. But it was probably self-publishing, I guess, now is a little bit easier, right?
It's easier, but you still got to put money and time into it.
Yeah. Right. Aren't there publishers you can do on demand where the book gets housed? If somebody orders it, right, then they print it and send it.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Okay.
So we did that. The book came out, I think, in 97.
Okay.
No, 2007. I'm sorry.
Okay.
2007, pre-social media. But the book is not so much about advertising and marketing. It's about the strategy of what you need to do. So even when I teach social media, I tell everybody the first class, if you're here to learn about the latest algorithms, you're in the wrong class. I'm here to tell you how to work on social media and why it's a strategy and not a tactic.
Okay, right. Because the strategies are the same. They're just on different platforms. There's different ways to implement the strategy.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Okay. Makes sense.
So, yeah. So, I mean, I had one student write that they didn't like my class because I didn't give the algorithms, even though I warned them. And he said,
what algorithms are you going to give? They change by the minute.
I know, but that's what they wanted. They wanted the latest.
Right.
And I'm not an engineer.
Of course.
So he said, how good could she be? She doesn't have an Instagram account. And I read the review and I said, I'm in pharmaceutical marketing. These are 50 plus year old white men who are extraordinarily conservative. They're not on Instagram.
No way.
Some of their employees.
Some of them aren't on LinkedIn.
They're not on Instagram.
Right.
Go where your clients are. Again, tactics versus strategy.
Right, right.
So, and I work with a lot of fashion designers, and they need to be on Instagram.
Yeah, of course. Well, because their stuff is demonstrative. You know, they have pictures of
it. You can buy directly off Instagram.
Right.
So that was that. And so the book came out. I wound up speaking. I wound up speaking in China, going around, you know, going on panels when the book comes out. And the book really, you don't make a lot of money from the book.
No, it's a promotional tool. It's content marketing.
Thank you.
I don't make money on this either. Don't, I hate to tell you, but I'd like to. You know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody earlier today and we're looking at a company potentially to purchase. Well, I would be the CEO and stuff. I'm always looking at stuff because, you know, I'd love to drive value and stuff. But she says to me, oh, I thought you were going to be a podcaster. I go, for my career? How am I going to, I'm not Joe Rogan. What, you know, how am I going to monetize that? Oh, I don't know. I always imagined you that way. I'm like, well, when you figure out that way to do that, I'm all in, you know? So I don't know how to monetize this thing. I have merchandise and stuff. Doesn't do anything. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it builds the brand. That's all it does.
Exactly, right. It builds the brand of me, Beinhacker Law. So that's fine, right? I'm working on a book right now with a friend of mine who's a publicist and a writer. Of course, I wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't for him because it's like pulling teeth. And we're getting close to a manuscript. It's called 10 Ways to Get Sued by Anyone and Everyone. And it's not the way, it's not how to get sued. It's how to obviously avoid suits and the mistakes that business owners and entrepreneurs make by not putting things in writing. And we have a memory expert that's involved and all that kind of stuff. I'll send you a copy.
First thing I teach them. Thank you. There. Yeah. And I'll definitely promote it to my classes. The first thing I teach them in the first couple of classes is I bring them in for law for, I bring an attorney in like you.
Right.
And it's not just corporate structure. Are you doing an LLC, a C corp, an S corp, whatever you're doing. But it's like the importance of contracts and getting things in writing.
Of course.
And
because people don't remember what they talk about. You can't, with all the, especially nowadays, right? With all the information that's passing your face and your eyes and your ears on a minute by minute basis, there's no way you can remember what we talked about a week ago, a month ago, 4 years ago, right? You're going to remember this and you don't put it in writing. Just a recipe for disaster.
Exactly. And then what happens if you wind up with an unscrupulous partner in one of my companies? And it's like, if it's not written down, you're screwed.
You're screwed. You got no dispute resolutions. You got nothing to say what really you spoke about. Even if you had text messages and emails, I think I mentioned this during the class we were talking about, you know, it leaves it open for your partner to say, yeah, but don't you remember that conversation we had 4 months ago when we were talking on the phone or on Zoom? You're like, what are you talking about? We didn't have that conversation. Yes, we did. Well, good luck.
Yeah.
You know,
I had four entrepreneurs come into my office when I had an office. It was the most expensive living room in Manhattan because clients were too busy to come in. Anyway, I have four entrepreneurs come in. They all met at NYU Business School, I think. One guy's father was a doctor and he had the intellectual property for medical device.
Okay.
Two guys were engineers and they were going to work on a SaaS, a software as a service.
Right.
And put everything together. And the fourth guy was just a businessman. He was going to manage everything.
So this is one company they're putting together.
This is one company they're going to put together. And I said to them, okay, where's your operating agreement?
Yeah.
We don't need it. We're all friends.
Oh, boy.
And then I proceeded to go around and point out how each of the four people could screw each other.
Of course.
You know, 6 months down the line, after the guy has the website and the software as a service set up, the guy whose father has the intellectual property could say, screw you, I don't need you. Now I got what I need.
Right.
The two programmers could say, well, we set everything up. Screw you. We're going to take everything and go with it. And
look what happened with Facebook.
I started the company. I got the company. Screw you all.
Right.
So I don't hear from them. They thank me. They're very appreciative. They go away. 2.5 years later, I get a phone call from the original guy who brought them in, and he said, every single thing you predicted happened.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
All the bad stuff.
Huh? All the bad stuff.
Yeah.
All the bad stuff.
Right.
And it's like, you know.
You know why, Sandra? Because I believe that people are good at heart and they don't really want to screw each other unless they feel that they're being screwed. But the problem is that when I remember what we spoke about, what our agreement is, and you remember it differently, first, then I don't trust you. And I said, you're trying to screw me, but you really believe that that's what we discussed. And I believe what I believe. And since we have nothing in writing to go back and say, well, I must have, I mean, that must have been what I agreed to because we signed it, right? you don't believe that. So you're sure in your mind that what you believe is true. And it just leads to distrust and then misunderstandings, which lead to arguments and lawsuits and good luck with a judge dealing with that. I mean,
and two issues come up. Well, that's one of my streams of income. I'm an arbitrator for FINRA.
Oh, okay.
When people have financial,
those are interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But a couple of things come up. I've had one student, she was forming the idea, and another person was the engineer who was going to execute it. And everybody doesn't want to spend money. And I tell them that if you don't spend the money up front, first of all, you're investing in the company, you got to spend money to make money.
Right.
If you don't spend the money up front, if you go to LegalZoom or to me, LegalZoom is bullshit.
Yeah, I hate LegalZoom and Rocket Lawyer. They're like
my, all of those online things to save money.
Right.
Then if there's a problem and you don't see a lawyer and get it in writing first, it's going to be a hell of a lot more expensive to fix the problem.
Right.
And your company, because you're a sole proprietor or two people, your company can't go forward because as soon as you get in a lawsuit, you're looking backwards to fix what happened.
Right. And they can't hire somebody like me who's less expensive to negotiate because they got nothing in writing. You need a litigator and they're going to want a $20,000 retainer, $25,000 retainer.
Exactly. And then so one woman said, well, I won't do a contract with my partner until we have money coming in. I said, honey, the horses already left the barn at that point.
Yeah. If you have a partner, it's one thing if you're your solo LLC, you don't have to make an agreement with yourself. But if you have a partner, you better get at least a bare bones agreement, a working agreement with your, who's responsible for what, who owns what. What if you break up, die, want to walk away, whatever.
Right.
Good luck with who owns the Instagram account and the name and the website and the phone number. And I have a business right now. I don't even want to say online the kind of business because then they'll know what it is. But basically, they're agreeing to not use anything because they can't come to an agreement on who gets what. So therefore, all their hard work and everything they built is worthless. And they're starting over. And of course, they're still fighting and arguing with each other. One has something, the other one won't give to the other one. And
right,
there's a lot of shit going on. So I sent them to a litigator. I said, listen, I can't do any more for you. Right. I can't. You got to go to somebody who's going to file a lawsuit and maybe get them to settle, maybe get them to arbitration or mediation or whatever it's going to be. But these people are sticking it to you. So,
yeah. And the other issue, which actually came up in class last night, is. And the first thing I say, and sometimes people come in with partners in their family, is don't do business with your family.
Yeah.
Because it's hard enough with a friend or a stranger, but when you got to live with somebody like a husband or a spouse, husband, wife, or a brother, a sister, an uncle, an aunt, a mother, right. A parent. Oh, my God. You got to have it in writing.
Yeah. You know what? I don't know if I completely agree with that because I think that there are some very good family businesses out there, but I will agree with you this, that if you're going to go into business with your cousin, with your uncle, with your spouse, well, maybe with your spouse, you need a prenup too. I don't know. But at least with relatives, you better make sure that you follow all the formalities that you need to do. So you avoid those kind of arguments that you don't end up with. I had a guy come to me once and he took over his business from his dad with his brother. His dad's now old, right? He comes to me because he's like, listen, I'm the president. I run the business. My brother gets 50% of the income, doesn't do anything. I give him a project. He doesn't finish it. He walks, wanders up. I got to change it. I go, well, what does your operating agreement say? Oh, we don't have an operating agreement. $80 million business, no operating agreement. So I go, I don't know what to tell you. Why would your brother agree to that now? He's got it pretty good.
Right.
And this was a client of a former colleague of mine, a former partner of mine. So I don't work with them anymore. I don't know what happened, but I'm thinking of all creative ways to say, well, to the two brothers, like I'm being objective, you really ought to have agreements in place. Why don't you do this and you do this? And we'll, it was a whole big scheme
you brought up the right phrase before. And I bring this up in class. It's like when you go into a partnership with somebody, first is a dance, it's like dating. And
yeah.
Then it's a prenup.
Right.
The agreement is a prenup. What's
right.
going to happen if we break up? What's going to happen if someone dies? What's going to happen if we go in two directions? What's going to happen if we get bought out?
There should be a legal requirement when you get married that they say you have, it doesn't have a prenup, it should be like a marital contract. Not that we love each other when we get married, but all the details. It should have to address things like guardianship and asset, because those are the problems that come. And if you just set the rules ahead of time and you were forced to do it by law, so you didn't say like it wasn't romantic, it was just part of the process, I think that a lot of these divorces would go a lot smoother, you know? Because you have no choice. You'd have the rules down already. This is the rules. Okay, fine. We agreed the kids are going to go here and split with, you know, unless your husband's, you know, murdered somebody or he's got a drinking problem. That's always, but then it wouldn't matter anyway. So I think that that's, and business, it's like business divorce, just like same you said.
Thing. Yeah. It's the same thing. It's just you're protecting yourself, you're protecting your partner, and you're protecting the company.
So now, do you think, how many of your students, and obviously the group that was in your living room then, I didn't listen, but how many of them you think falls on deaf ears? Almost like when you have a kid who's in high school and college and they're like, oh, dad, you don't know. It's different now. Like, do you think that sometimes falls on deaf ears, or you think they're listening to you because you're the teacher?
I think they're listening.
Okay.
Like we did finances last night and everybody cringes with finances. They freak out.
Yeah.
I'm an artist. I'm a designer.
You know, I said that on a podcast this morning. A lot of entrepreneurs are very right brain, right? You want to be creative and develop it, but that's has nothing to do with finances. That's all left brain, but it is so dangerous to not know your numbers.
Right.
Because you're doing things that are not profitable. You have no idea.
And then I spoke to a different class on Wednesday night. And I was talking about operations and everybody was silent. And I said, is anybody still awake? And they started to laugh. And I said, I realize you're all starting out as fashion designers, but here's the thing. You're going to need to know this at some point.
Correct.
So I think the class you spoke with, the class with the numbers last night, they were all freaking out about how to do financial projections and half of them don't have a business yet.
Right. But it's a good exercise.
Yeah. Put this on file. Because you're going to need it at some point.
And
right now you don't know what you need to know. So at least now you know what you don't know and you have it on file.
Yeah. You just need the tools when you get there. Look, you got to be.
You need to know there
things.
Are tools.
Right. Well, you know, financial projections, right? You can project things out on a spreadsheet. I'm going to sell this many units. And like you said, operations, just because you don't have operations now, you don't have personnel. What would you like to have? You want to do everything yourself forever?
Well, what are you going to do when you get your first purchase order from Macy's?
Right. And you got nobody working for you. You can't do that.
Nobody working for you. You don't know how to
plan.
You don't know how to read the information.
Right.
You don't realize that stupid, silly things that you think are stupid and silly, like what kind of hanger you put the bathing suit on,
could make a big difference.
It's specified. If you don't put it on the right bathing suit, they're going to charge you for every hanger. They have to take the bathing suit off and put on another hanger. And people don't realize this. And if you can't do
it, because they don't read the agreements that they're signing. Is that what it is?
Right. Because it's in Felicia type.
Yeah. And they don't go to a lawyer to read it.
Right. They don't go to a lawyer. They don't have somebody in operations who can handle that for them. They're doing everything. And it's like, I don't want to be bothered. I'm not going to do this. And then, you know, I teach negotiation practices also. And one of the issues with negotiations and intellectual property is it's great. You need the lawyer there. But you don't hand the whole contract over to the lawyer and say, here, do it.
Well, that's one of the problems is when I go through a contract. Yeah, I make my clients read the contract. I said, listen, I'm not reading the contract. I'll look at it from a legal standpoint, but I'm going to say, do you realize what this paragraph says? If they say, yes, I realize that I have to put the bathing suit on a certain thing or I get charged and this and that.
Right.
That's fine. But I've been with people I did when I was younger. Some business purchases where there was a lease involved, let's say they're taking over a lease, right, from a restaurant or something like that. And they don't want to pay me to read the 50, 60 page lease. So I said, all right, listen, then you read it, but make sure you read every page. And I was in a situation once where somebody didn't read the whole lease and there was a few pages missing. Now, luckily, he remembered that he told me not to read it, but there was a few pages missing. And ironically, those pages were very important. Like the rent escalated over certain years. And then the guy was, the seller was saying, oh, I didn't realize those were left out. Like it was like buyer beware. I'm going to leave them out. If you find them, then I'll give them to you. And he didn't read it. So
it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So
that's what you got to do. So that's okay. So you've been doing a lot of teaching, which seems to fit your.
I've been teaching for about 10 years. I teach integrated marketing in the master's in integrated marketing program at NYU, which is fabulous. I teach
Is that in the business school? What's it called?
It's a separate school.
Okay.
It's a separate school that issues master's degrees.
Got it.
It's a more practical degree.
Okay.
I teach setting a course for your business, knowing your market, which is market research.
Yeah, that's a big one. You don't know your numbers. People don't know their target market, their ideal client. They can't do business with everybody. I try and explain that to people. Who do you do business? I do business with everybody.
Right.
Okay, that's nobody then. Now, I'm not going to remember you. You got to know who you're targeting.
Who's your target market? Millennials. Then I come in with a chart that breaks down millennials into six segments. You're not going to deal with somebody who eats a man who eats a McDonald's. You're not selling him women's bathing suits. So you might as well save that 20% of your marketing.
Right.
And focus it somewhere else. So they have to learn that. They get sent to the library. So I teach that. I teach financing. And then I put together the curriculum for a course, a 10-session course called Fashion Business Essentials. And I teach the introduction, the business plan, all that.
And then somebody else teaches.
And when it first started, I hired the faculty. So yeah. I teach whatever they need me to teach there. And I think that's all. And I teach Fast Track for the city. And I teach Fast Track Growth Venture for people who already have businesses in Chatham, for the women's.
They're looking to accelerate or grow more.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a lot of the people you teach with teach to are not like kids in college. These are people that either have a business, looking to start a business.
Right.
And they're looking for the tools. I wish more people did that. They need to learn how to write a business plan and have focus on all these parts, and they don't do it.
Or business model canvas. They need to understand what goes into a business. You don't just open it up.
Right.
And,
the accidental entrepreneur. Here we are.
Here we are.
Right, exactly. Now, you also own businesses, don't you, Sandy?
Right. Well, I had four. I have two now.
Okay.
I have a lot of medical and pharmaceutical experience. So somebody brought me in to put together the management team and the advisory board for a medical device software as a service. And we were in business for 6 months and we wound up with an investor and we had exit.
Oh, that quick?
Yeah, that quick. And then I formed a we actually never even put anything in writing because it never really got off the ground. A consultancy this is around 2010, 2011, when medical practices were first being forced to adopt electronic medical records by the government.
Yeah. Right, so EMR was just starting then. Yeah.
Right, consulting or trying to get consulting contracts. And that didn't work out. It lasted a year. And it turned out my business partner had a terminal disease.
Hey.
Lack of ethics.
That's funny.
So that one went.
Right.
And now...
I thought you were like he had, I was going to say, drinking problem. I didn't know what you were going to say.
No. Lack of ethics. anyway, incurable disease.
Yeah, that's definitely an incurable, especially in business.
So now I'm a facilitator and I facilitated many years and have stayed in touch for over 10 years.
Okay.
Are forming a group where we're doing... kind of peer-to-peer review mastermind, not in competition with the Women's Center. But for people who have existing businesses, and it's particularly important with COVID, but even without COVID, no man is an island. No woman is an island. You can't run a business alone. You have to have a support team.
Mentors, advisors, something.
Right.
Yep.
And
definitely.
So this becomes a peer advisory group.
Right.
And, it's 12 people, 10 to 12, 8 to 12 people.
So it's like a sounding board type of a setup?
A little more than that.
Okay.
They make a commitment to meet for a year, 3 hours a month.
Okay.
And
that's a big commitment. 3 hours a month is a lot.
Yeah. And then in between the month, they stay in touch with each other, but they have a committed accountability partner for at least 6 months, and then they can swap off. And they can talk to other people, but they can swap off. And so they do that.
So you run this as a business?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's what do you do? One group a year or something?
No. As soon as we, we're just starting. As soon as we get businesses in the same size category.
That's what I was going to ask you. So there is some sort of a relationship.
Somebody, Right. Somebody with a $5 million business and 10 employees is going to have different issues than somebody with a $200,000 business and maybe one employee.
Right.
Different business issues.
Yes. So, it's hard to help each other. Right.
Right. So we're going to do that. And then in between, we've devised about 10 DIY self audits.
Okay.
So, you know, check this out. See if you're missing something.
So like you go to your website and you can do the self audit. And oh no, you got to be in the program.
You got to be in the program.
Right. Okay. Right.
So we give that to them. And then we facilitate what goes on, but mostly people are bonding with each other. And the last group I did, which was for the Women's Center, after a year, I think a core group of six of them stayed together and are ongoing. And you see that with Fast Track as well. People stay in touch for years because you can't, what's the African phrase? You know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go with somebody.
Okay. So, you know, I know the one about the lion wakes up and knows that it's got to run faster than the slowest gazelle, and the gazelle's got to run faster than the fastest lion. Right. They're going to get eaten. Yeah.
Yeah. And another African proverb, which I didn't know, is it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a village or a small village to build a business.
For sure.
You can't do it alone. You got to be able to soundboard off of people.
Right.
You know, I have an unofficial business partner for 20 years. And I call him up and I ask him questions. He calls me up and he asks me questions. It's like, it's got to be, you got to build your own community. And this is a way to start it.
Yeah. Clients of mine that are involved. One's involved in EO, the entrepreneur's org, and swears by it. I think he pays thousands of dollars a year and he meets, you know, monthly, and he has advisory board and they all share ideas. And then my other friend's involved in Vistage. If you heard of Vistage? Vistage is like $1,800 a month. So it's like 20 grand. And and all these high power, they're not high powered, but they're, you know, people with large family businesses. They're doing 50, 100 million in sales and they share ideas. I'm having a problem with one of our executives, or we got an employee issue, and they have sound boards and all kinds of different resources. So yeah, there's a lot of good groups out there.
This is $900 for a year. So we're starting low.
Yeah.
But it's the same concept. The commitment works.
Right.
Also, the people I'm working with and the businesses I'm working with are probably significantly smaller than the ones.
Yeah, and that's a steep, like I have a small legal practice. I can meet some really great people in some of those organizations, but I'm just not in the position to pay $1,500, $1,800 a month. Doesn't mean I won't someday, but right now it's a lot. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So this is more geared towards a smaller business person.
Right. And I think you have to have at least $1 million in sales to be in these organizations. So you have a lower barrier to entry, which is good.
Yeah, the Women Presidents organization has had $1 million in sales, or $2 million if you have a physical product, and $1 million if you're a consultant. So we're below that level, and we're dealing with people below that level. And it works.
Yeah. So, well, it's an overlooked segment of the marketplace, really. I mean,
right.
Because most of these organizations, I mean, I understand the organization formed because the members want to meet bigger and better and move up. But there's this whole ignored section of these people that need
the solos.
The
definition of small business is under 500 employees. Well,
like the federal definition, it's ridiculous.
Right. If you're under 10 employees, you're not
nothing.
Even universe as the other people.
That's so stupid. Under 500 is a small business.
I agree.
That could be $100 million in sales.
Right. Right. As opposed to somebody, you know, who has three or four employees.
Absolutely.
So that's what we're doing. And I'm excited about it. And we'll see. That's all.
So how many, is that four? Did we get through four businesses?
That's the fourth.
Okay, good. And so what made you think of this idea? Was it just came out of all the people that you're teaching, or?
It came out of the people I'm teaching and the fact that people graduate Fast Track. They graduate, they take a course in a school, and then it's like, here's your diploma, congratulations.
Right. Well.
And here's a list of resources, and then they just kind of fall off a cliff. Well, the resources are good, but you really need the community.
Yeah.
You need the bonding with other people. And so we're putting something in place that addresses that need.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, not a lot of people. Look, there's some people that learn, right? They go and they go seek out their own people and they're going well. But I would say the majority of people probably need support. They need contingency. It's the same on the estate planning side. So I used to do wills. I still do wills for people. I do wills and stuff, right? But when people leave my office with signed documents, what happens after that? Nothing. It goes, I don't know, half the time they can't find it. So I put in an electronic vault where they can have all the documents loaded up. Now, it's a maintenance service. It's $500 setup, $50 a month. They get one annual review. All other work's at 50% of my regular fees. And they get, I think there's a healthcare, like emergency access card for your living will, things like that. But I would constantly get people come back to me and they would say, I need a copy of this because I can't find it. I go, well, that you need an original of your power of attorney. You can't use a copy. No, really?
And part of that, and that's great. Part of that is knowing yourself and knowing where your strengths and weaknesses are. So like when I had people working with me in my office, mm-hmm. I would have new interns or new part-time, you know, low wage people come in. And they'd be in and they'd look around and they'd look at my admin and they'd look at people who are working with me and they say, so when do I get trained? And everybody would burst out laughing because I don't train people. They got to figure out where they fit in. And if they don't fit in. And it's a terrible way to do business. It's not organized. It's not whatever. However, I wound up with a lot of really great people who work with me. So you got to know where your weaknesses are. And I'm a Teflon person. Nobody gives me the original. Everybody has it because I'm going to lose it.
Yeah, I don't keep original anything.
Yeah.
People go, do you have my original will? I can't find it. I go, well, no. And not only that, you know, I know law firms that keep, you know, this original's on file. They don't keep them in like a gun safe that's protected or fireproof. It's in a file cabinet somewhere. The building burns down, your will's gone. It should be in a safe deposit box or in a safe in your house, as long as you don't put like some video in there. Somebody did that. They videoed their, you know, contents of their house and they put the video in the safe with their other thing. But the safe got so hot that the video melted. Stuff didn't catch on fire, but it was a little bit of a mess. So, yeah. But I agree with you.
It's memory. I had a colonoscopy 6-7 months ago.
Those are fun.
I went through one of these books that has the best doctors in New York. And I pick this guy and I show up in his office, you know, for the preliminary before the actual procedure. And he walks in and he goes, hi, long time no see. And I looked at him like, who the hell are you? And he said, I did your endoscopy 5 years ago.
Yeah. You know what I learned?
I didn't even remember. He had my file.
It was probably your blacking it out. I think that I've learned something about life. Don't do anything that ends in oscopy. It's just not good. Whatever it is, it's not something you want to do. It's something you have to do. I remember I had to have something. It was called like a sigmoidoscopy or something. And the doctor, as a friend of mine, had like some emergency at the hospital. So he's like, listen, we got to do this fast because I got this emergency. I'm like, fast? It was fast and it was not comfortable.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So
it's not comfortable even if it's slow. So.
Right. Exactly. I'm 53. So I've had my first colonoscopy and, the only good thing about colonoscopy is that you're asleep. So then you wake up and it's over. But yeah, it's not. Yeah, I think that's a good adage in life is don't do anything ends in oscopy.
Well, a good adage in life is don't get old if you can do it.
That would be. Yeah. But then your friends are all dying. You'll be here 400 years from now. What the hell are you going to do with yourself?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You don't want that to have like the what was that movie? Tom Hanks, The Green Mile or something. And he lives for a very long time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So tell me, like, if somebody's looking to interact with you to take your classes, or we'll put links in the show notes, but how can they get in touch with you? And, you know,
sholtzman@marketingcures.com.
Okay. And I know you're on LinkedIn, right?
I'm on LinkedIn. I have a Facebook page. Marketing Cures has a Facebook page.
Okay.
I can't access my Twitter account. Something happened.
Okay. Well, you'll work on that.
Yeah. I've been working on that for 2 weeks.
Get one of your young students. They'll probably figure it out.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Exactly.
But no, I'm on LinkedIn.
Okay.
And I do individual coaching.
Okay.
Reasonably priced.
Okay. And how do they find out about your group program now, the new program?
Just email me and I'll put you on the mailing list.
Perfect.
We're not ready. The first group is going to run in January, I think.
Well, that's fine. This comes, you know, it takes me 90 to 120 days to get these episodes out anyway. So it'll be perfect timing.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, and you know, it's the end of the year. So nobody does anything. It's the holidays. It's all this and that. So we're planning on sometime in January to get that out. And for my courses, just contact me and I'll let you know where I'm teaching, what I'm teaching.
Well, now you're more accessible, right? Because they can take your class on Zoom. They don't have to go to the city.
Right.
So
right.
It's more, you can sign up for stuff. You know, I think your timing's good.
Bad news is the thing with entrepreneurs is the energy in the room.
Is that a bad thing?
No, it's a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's better than Zoom. I mean, everybody in Zoom is.
Oh, I see. When you're in person, it's because you get all these excited, bright brain people. They're all want to hear about what they're doing and they're sharing their ideas.
So like, you know, usually the last class, we all go out, depending on what time the class is over, we go out for drinks, we go out for lunch. Everybody bonds together. We can't do that.
Yeah. And you make connections. I guess you can still stay in touch, but it's not the same. Like you said, you grow closer.
Well, for me, anyway.
Spending a whole semester together. Yeah.
On the other hand, you bring in people from all over the country who are taking the course.
Right.
So you get a lot of varied views, and that's really exciting.
Yeah. Now you can speak in Singapore without traveling over there. Just
exactly.
Get on Zoom, and it's the middle of the night here, but who cares?
I know. I had we lost enrollment, but I was supposed to be teaching in Shanghai on Zoom at 8 a.m. which was 8 o'clock at night their time.
Right. It's an 12 hours. I talked to somebody in Singapore. I did an interview on the podcast. Day was 8 o'clock there in the morning, and it was 8 o'clock at night here. Even earlier. I think it's more right. I think it's a little bit bigger time difference with Shanghai than Singapore.
12 hours.
They're both.
I took off at 3 p.m, got in at 3 p.m. their time, but it was 3 a.m. my time. Ran into somebody on the street and they said, oh, we're going to dinner in 2 hours. So I wound up having dinner at 5 a.m.
For breakfast. Yeah.
For breakfast, right?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I think your timing with this new business and everything is a good one. They say there's more businesses that have started and formed and grown during coronavirus, which I guess, aside from more than 200,000 people dying, is a silver lining. Yeah. So your timing may be good. You may get a lot of...
Let's see.
People interested in it. All right. So I thank you for coming on the podcast, spending your time with me. I appreciate it.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.